The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions.
Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network, helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Show. I'm Steve Cordasco. Great show coming up for you. We're going to talk about retirement and life transitions into retirement. Did you know that there are different types of retirement? When we think of retirement, I know it's like, you know, the rocking chair on the porch and that's it. Your working days are over. No, that's not the case. And here at Cordasco Financial Network, we actually break retirement down into three different types of retirement. And when it comes time to plan for your retirement and take that transition, it's important for you to know what those three different types are. Within one of them, there's two kind of subsets of retirement. It's very important to get your retirement planning correct with the type of retirement you want, and there's three different types, and you have to develop your cash flow around those three different types, so it's important for you to stay tuned for that. Hey, life insurance. You know, a lot of people feel cringed when they hear that word life insurance, but it's a very important part of an overall financial plan. How much should you have? Do you have too much? What's the right way to think about life insurance, and what's the wrong way to be handling life insurance? We'll cover it. And then I'll jump into talking about the markets. Lots of volatility going on, ups and downs. We're going to talk about the Vanguard Real Estate Fund. We're going to talk about the Vanguard Total Bond Fund. We're going to talk about Dodge and Cox. We're going to talk about investments that are getting hit hard right now from this market. And we're going to do it with folks from our investment team. I'm going to give you my input. And we're also going to talk about the big picture and the geopolitical environment and what that's doing to the markets, as well as Facebook and the Federal Reserve. So you want to stay tuned for that.
I would like to begin by covering three types of retirement and their very different saving strategies that each require. We're going to get into that and why there are different types of retirement. This wasn't how things have always been, but in today's world, as you know, it's a brave new world, things change. And we're now being able to apply more science and data to trends and what people do with their time throughout their life. We can credit the baby boom generation right now for supplying us with just a massive, massive group of individuals who are entering into retirement. They're either in their pre-retirement years or they're in retirement, and we call that post-retirement. So because we have so many folks that are in this phase of life, retirement, and so many on the train to that destination called retirement that are baby boomers, that we now have a fair amount of good academic research that's coming out on what exactly is the best quality of life, the best approach to taking that path of retirement. Let's begin. The traditional approach to retirement's pretty relatively straightforward, as I mapped out. You save and invest as much as you can for as long as you can, starting as early as you can, to accumulate enough retirement savings that you no longer need to work and instead can enjoy that life of leisure. For those who struggle to save, Social Security is in place to provide that retirement safety net. And we probably all know of someone who is living off of Social Security. For everyone else, the more and faster you save, the earlier you can retire and the more leisure time there may be. Have you thought about what retirement will look like for you? Are you venturing down a path of that traditional retirement? Fewer and fewer people actually want a retirement of leisure. Barely half of today's retirees state that they never intended to work again, and barely one-third of pre-retirees have an intention to make retirement a period of not working indefinitely. Whether it's part-time work, entrepreneurialism, encore career, or some other path, retirement is less and less about not working at all, and more about finding different types of engagement. The amount of time spent thinking about what would be the best retirement is sort of falling by default to what the traditional approach to retirement has been. And that is, once you retire, you go into this life of leisure. So why is this important to you? Why do we have to think deeper about this? Because the reality is that if retirement is really more and more about doing different and perhaps more fulfilling work, then it really might not take as nearly much to retire money-wise as commonly assumed. It also creates for different type of planning. A retirement portfolio themselves might look very different if the primary purpose is to be a buffer for retirement transition and perhaps scaled back work. And in today's world, we're finding more and more, almost half of those who retire end up getting bored in that life of leisure. I'm here to tell you, it's a brave new world. And at 62, 65 years of age, many who are planning of not working and going into that life of leisure, statistics show that that's probably not going to happen. So in turn, a future with different types of retirement could also increase demand for different ways to plan. For example, disability insurance. There might be a need for that if you're going to continue to do some type of work after age 65. It also would increase the need for maybe some emergency savings. You might want to do a mid-career transition, or you might want to semi-retire until you decide to go back to work. You need to know that it's not just about a traditional retirement, because when it comes to you putting together a retirement plan, the answer is having the right dialogue, having the right agenda for what you want your life to be. You need to know what type of retirement will be there for you. Let me map out the three. Here they are. The traditional retirement. There's a timeline. For the first 18 years of your life, you get trained. Maybe you're an apprentice. Maybe you go to work, get an education. Whatever it is, you're training. Then somewhere in your early 20s, you end up working until 65. And at 65, you retire, right? That's the traditional timeline. But now what we're finding is that within traditional retirement, there's actually another type of retirement called early retirement. It's part of that traditional retirement. It's where the same thing, you train that first 18 to 20 years of your life. Then you come out into the workforce in your early 20s. And if it looks like you've saved enough, you're on a path, the right path. Some people look to retire in their 50s, hoping to be able to start that leisure life early. Here's what we find today because of the baby boomers. Many are not just falling back on the life of leisure. So now we have different types of retirements. You have that traditional, which is early, and then we have something called semi-retirement. First 18 to 20 years, you're training. Then you work, maybe until 55, and then you go into part-time work. I've done this for many Verizon employees, for example, when they started to look to scale back their workforce. Many took an early retirement at age 55, 56, 57, and then they went and worked part-time. They started their own companies, many, who then got hired back by Verizon, not as employees, but as contractors. And what they were able to do is kind of weave that part-time work around their leisure. That's called semi-retirement. Then there's something called temporary retirement and sabbaticals. That's the third type of retirement. Check this out. Same thing. Train until your 20s, get your education or an apprenticeship, whatever it may be. And then you work maybe until age 30, take a break, go back to work at age 33, take a break, go back to work a few years later, take a break. It's work plus mini retirements. Why are these three different types of retirement important to you? Because planning for your type of retirement should be about you, about your quality of life, your best life. How do you know your type of retirement and what's best for you? It takes the right communication, communicating correctly. Your work, your career plan for many of us are our identity. So it's very emotional to think of change. It's scary, it's confusing, and it's really so emotional. That decision makes us, when it comes to planning, cloudy. And we revert to the status quo, which is just that thought of a traditional retirement. We haven't been able to think about doing something different until, hey, here's Cardesco talking about a guy who decided to just totally leave the workforce to be at home when his kids come home. And his wife, too. Together, they made the decision. To them, that's an investment. They're not putting money into a 401k, but they're investing in the togetherness. So it's about going into a stage of life where it's about your quality of life. So here's what I do. I take what's called a mapping approach to what you want your best life to look like. That's a question to you. Have you thought about it? What works best is to paint a picture. And this is how we go about trying to help people plan for those retired years or those of you that are in retirement that may not feel fulfilled. We then, as financial advisors, help you prioritize things you need to have happen so that you get there. It starts with understanding what it is that will give you your best quality of life. Got a spouse? It gets even more confusing because that spouse might have their own separate set of what's important to them. Doing this almost 30 years, I have many situations where there's a couple I've done planning for and one is left. Got to remember, a lot of folks who came to me in their 60s, they're in their 90s. There's one left. And I can't tell you how many times that one person said, yeah, I had a good life, but I wish I would have did this, this, and this. Well, why didn't you? Well, Jimmy worked all the time, and I know he wanted to go to Florida, and I missed this part of the stuff. There's always something there. So what we try to do is get both individuals, if there's a husband and wife, dialoguing of what their best life looks like. Separate, 80% of it, 70%, depending if you've been married for more than 15, 20 years. Statistically, I can tell you 60 to 75% of a couple who are at that same stage of life of entering into whatever retirement might look like have very similar ideas of what they want their quality of life to look like. But guess what? That 20 or 30% is drastic. That's a big part. So it begins with education, helping you articulate what you want and need. And that's where somebody can help do that. And that's what I want you to take out of this. Retirement planning, to do it right, often requires help from someone who specializes in it, just like you would go to a doctor. Next, besides education, is clarity, a visual to see your priorities, tools that can help you get there. So that when those priorities are mapped out, whether they can become a reality. And then lastly, guidance, a good partner to help you through the challenges. Somebody had health and wellness as one of their top priorities. What does that look like? It's different for everyone. In this particular case, it was eating healthier, taking cooking classes, and is there a budget for that? Well, guess what? What's important to her as a top priority was spending more time with loved ones. Put that in order. He was the loved one that's top of the list. So taking cooking classes together and partnering in preparing meals to eat healthier, both are achieving their goals, and it takes sometimes some dialoguing. There's always curveballs in life, and that's where having a partner can help you get through what some of those curveballs may be, whether it's one of your kids looking to tap into you for some help, whether it's health issues, whether it's rising cost, whether it's anxieties that come from things you just can't control, like the markets, or just bouncing ideas off of saying, hey, I'm thinking about volunteering, and I feel as if, you know, my friends down at the synagogue want me to get involved in doing certain things, and to go back and look at somebody's plan and say, well, geez, your priority was to scale back on things like that and spend more time with family. How do we give you both? Can we tie family into it? So do you see different types of retirement, different types of planning, different types of approaches, different types for different people? The beauty today is that we have enough statistical analysis, thanks to the greatest generation as well as the baby boom generation, for us to work with as financial advisors, as retirement planning specialists, to help guide you through it so that you can live your best quality of life in those years after your career path. Hey, I'm Steve Cordasco. If you want to learn more, just send me an email, asksteve@cfnplan.com. I also have my retirement guide updated with new material and new statistics. So you can ask for the retirement guide, and the retirement guide will help you down that path of putting a plan together to match your best quality of life in retirement, whatever that retirement looks like for you, whether it's traditional retirement, semi-retirement, or whether it's sabbaticals or temporary retirement. Those three areas have very different planning approaches, and having somebody who can guide you and help provide for you during those years is very, very important. So the retirement guide can help you get off to the right start and be able to map out and articulate what your goals and objectives are, what your wants and needs are, in a way that is very unique and very different so that you do live that best life. Hey, I'm Steve Cordasco. Thanks again. Just send me an email, asksteve@cfnplan.com. I'll send you the retirement guide or answer any questions you have on retirement.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about life insurance and what it means to you, your family, your business possibly, why life insurance is something that needs to be looked at a little bit deeper to make sure that you're not being oversold insurance or that you're underinsured. Keep it here on the Your Life, Your Wealth show.
Steve's back with more of Your Life, Your Wealth in just a moment.
Hi, it's Steve Cordasco. Do you have a question about wealth planning, taxes, or do you just need some thoughtful guidance about managing your money? I'll be answering some of your questions during upcoming Your Life, Your Wealth shows and podcasts. If you have a question that you'd like answered on the show, drop me an email to asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfn, as in Cordasco Financial Network, plan.com. Include a brief overview of your question and a phone number where we can reach you to arrange a call to the show. So get your questions ready. Email me at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com.
Your life, your wealth continues. Here again, Steve Cordasco.
We're going to talk about life insurance. Ugh, I know. Tough lift, huh? Oh, geez, do we have to talk about it? All right, before you turn the dial, before you hit the button, slow down a little bit because we got to talk about it. And life insurance is a hugely important piece of overall planning, the risk strategy planning of everyone's life today. I need to get into it because there's a trend that's taking place. And those of you that don't like life insurance who are thinking about hitting the button, keep it here. There's a new study out by the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago that says life insurance ownership is down 17% since 1989. 60% of households had life insurance just 2 years ago. That's down from almost 80% in 1989. A large part of the decline is a puzzle that they say just can't be explained by shifts in demographics, right? How about family structure? Kids living at home, getting married later, having less children. They're finding that's not the answer to this puzzle. How about income or education? You know, people earning less, insurance becoming more expensive, things like that. The authors of the study say that a number of factors could be driving the numbers down that are very different than what we just talked about. So here are some of what they believe could be it. Rising life expectancy. They feel as if people are living longer and therefore in their later years, they're dropping their life insurance coverage, feeling they just don't need it. Kids are out of the house. The need for risk coverage of life is just not that important to them in their late years. How about this one? Altered tax rules that make buying insurance less appealing. And they also think, lastly, the ease of finding and buying attractive alternatives to insurance, like investments for savings. So people are saying, hey, my 401k has got X amount of money in it, my IRA, if I save enough, that if some rainy day occurs, that the money can be tapped. Rising life expectancy. Yeah, you know what? I agree. It has a good amount to do with it. Tax rules make it less appealing. I agree with that as well. So when the estate rules change, what happens is folks that have more money, more assets, more wealth, often would go out and buy life insurance because life insurance proceeds go to beneficiaries tax-free to cover any tax that their assets might have. For example, a business. A business that's worth $2 or $3 million, often a business owner would have to go and get life insurance because if they should pass away, the owner of that business, the heirs would have to sell that business and taxes would be owed. Today, the estate numbers are different. So therefore, there's not as much appeal to buy life insurance to get around estate taxes. Life insurance would make up, in some cases, the difference of that. How about alternative investments like putting your money into other types of vehicles? I do think that has a little bit of a factor here, but we're going to get into why that's a factor. And I'm going to give you some more reasons on why I think we're in this place of time. But I also want to tie it to what this means to you. A changing trend like this could put some of you at risk. And you need to know, just because others are doing something and we're in a herd mentality of a society with everything that we're doing and sharing what we're doing with others. We have a whole generation coming up on social media where everybody seems to know what everybody is doing and how they're doing it. And we got a lot of people who want to be like everybody else. So we're going to talk about this. I'm going to go a little bit deeper into this. And I'm going to ask you the question, is life insurance oversold? Some would argue that back in the 70s and 80s, life insurance was oversold. It was pushed on people who probably should not have owned it. This is an argument going on within the industry that I'm in, those that offer guidance to people's financial well-being. So you seem to have a whole group out there, mainly advisors who kind of are in my space, fee-based type of advisors, advisors that act as fiduciaries in the space that I'm in. A lot of academics who get into the financial advisory business come into this world I'm in where we act as a fiduciary. We're registered investment advisory firms where we have to put the client's best interest first. And when we do a financial plan, if there is a need for insurance, it's mapped out, but yet the organization is not an insurance organization. It's a financial organization that is trying to steer you towards the right type of plan for you that addresses all types of different aspects: investing, risk management, cash flow management, tax management. Risk management is where life insurance falls. And to get a good plan that tells you whether or not you're underfunding insurance or overfunding is important. But guess what? This industry today of helping people with their wealth looks very, very different than the industry in the 70s and 80s and the 90s. So yes, I believe life insurance back then was very oversold. And for those that did a lot of the selling, many are on record, majority on record, saying that the folks they sold life insurance to in the 60s and 70s and even through the 80s, those that have needed their insurance, their families needed it, weren't crying when they received the check, the death benefit check, because they were angry the insurance was there. There was hugs and kisses coming to that insurance salesperson. Many financial investment firms today, like mine, but mine wasn't born out of this, they were born out of insurance agencies. I know someone who's father had an insurance practice. He got his son into wealth management because every time he would deliver death benefit proceeds to a widow or widower, Merrill Lynch, the local bank, or some organization got the proceeds. And 9 times out of 10, they were asking the individual where to go with the proceeds. Today, that son is running a wealth management practice. Many wealth management practices argue against life insurance. Why? Because it's the path of least resistance. People hear it's expensive. People hear that it's complicated. But you know what life insurance needs? It needs to be sold. And a lot of times advisors who are in that space of not being salespeople, but being more advisors, where they charge a fee or a fiduciary, don't feel good having to sell. So do I agree that life insurance is not needed by most families as the oversold group has to argue? No, I do not. Insurance serves a very good purpose for many, but that's the important part. What's the purpose? So what's the answer? What's it come down to? Financial literacy. And that's where I'm going with this. The industry of independent planners need to do better at educating the public on risk management. This is why this is important to you, because you have to look deeply at it at any stage of life. Here's my input on why life insurance coverage is down drastically. I believe there's a big conflict between the experts. The insurance industry has tried to make insurance a guaranteed thing. You have to have it. You must have it. They're salespeople. It's sold. You sell it, you move on to someone else. Objective planners, those in the investment industry, have made the focus on selling investments to avoid the complicated stereotype results of recommending insurance and being a salesperson. They take the path of least resistance. When somebody realizes in their financial plan that they might need insurance, oh, geez, I don't know, I can't afford it. Can we really afford that? And a lot of planners will address it that they need it. If they don't want to do it, it's on you. But they don't sell it the way traditional insurance salespeople sell. Needs to be a good balance here. So what does all mean to you and your wealth? It means that you could be at risk. What type of risk? Well, that's what insurance does. It covers risk. Risk of being underinsured or overinsured. Do you know whether you're underinsured or overinsured? You might say, well, geez, yeah, I read in Money Magazine that, you know, here I am, my house is paid off, and therefore I don't need insurance. Well, maybe, maybe not. Comes down to what you want those years to look like. What type of quality of life are you looking at? What about your spouse? Will that spouse be able to live that best life if you're not here? How much contribution to that best life comes from the expertise of that spouse and what that spouse knows and what the loss of that spouse will mean to the other person? A solution for everyone this month of financial literacy: learn how to get an objective insurance review. There are fiduciary fee-only planners out there who can do this. There's comprehensive plans that can be done. And there's some very good insurance people. I don't know which is the right and best for you. But what I do know is that you should learn about it. Educate yourself. on what is needed for you. And the most important part is what you want out of life while you're here and what life looks like when you're not here. What is that type of life? I've had some folks just recently say, taking care of loved ones is what's most important to both of them. That was their number one priority. Well, what does that mean to you? What does taking care of loved ones look like? It's being there to help them financially. I'm not here to judge and say that's a bad idea. I'm here to say a lot of people get themselves into financial mishap by doing that. But they want to be there to be able to help when needed. And for some, they want to leave a legacy behind. And so in some cases, in many cases, insurance can do that. How do you protect against other things that you have going on in your life that insurance can help protect against? All of that needs to be looked at. So here's my advice to you. Get an insurance review. I call it a risk analysis. A risk analysis for people who are skilled at doing financial planning, retirement planning, as well as life planning, can do this for you. And they can look at where you might have gaps, either too much insurance, too little insurance, or just right, something in between. But it all starts with being able to dialogue, learning what's most important to the household, that those individuals that need total comprehensive planning. So it's called an insurance review, please, or a risk analysis. You know, at our firm, we call it insurance review / risk analysis. Feel free to reach out, ask Steve at cfnplan.com if you would like to review where you are from a life insurance standpoint, as well as really any type. When we do insurance and risk analysis, that's why risk analysis is in there. It's not just life insurance, because our risk analysis covers many fronts. It covers disability, it covers long-term care, it covers life insurance, and it covers other risks as well, like umbrella policies, because we're finding now 1 in 10 wealthy people are ending up in lawsuits, just the way society is trending. We'll get into that a little bit later in the program. So all of these risk factors are very, very, very important to your overall financial well-being and how your plan will be put together. Feel free, send me an email, asksteve@cfnplan.com to react to today's program. Also, if you'd like a risk analysis and insurance review, just send me an email, asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com.
Up next, I'll be talking with our investment team, specifically Alton Woolagey, who is someone who helps our investment team a lot look at the world of investments and the market environment. We're going to talk about the volatility in the market. The stock market is looking like it crashes on the horizon. We don't think so, because I don't want you to go to break here all worried about that. But there is a lot of volatility. We're going to talk about specific names like the Vanguard Real Estate Fund, Total Bond Index Fund, Dodge & Cox. We're going to get into the weeds of specific investments and bonds and why they're so volatile right now as well when they're supposed to be safe havens.
Steve's back with more of Your Life, Your Wealth in just a moment.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here. Do you know that more than half of Americans would rather discuss politics, religion, or even death instead of their personal finances? Is that you? Does your financial advisor talk at you or with you? When was the last open and honest conversation you had with your advisor? My good friend Steve Cordasco and his team of advisors at Cordasco Financial Network go to the next level to communicate the complicated world of money with you. Not only will Cordasco Financial Network help with your wealth, but CFN also educates and provides clarity for you to live your life. Call Cordasco Financial Network right now at 215-558-3500. Again, that's 215-558-3500. Planning for your financial future takes a team, so call Cordasco now at 215-558-3500. With Cordasco Financial Network, you are in good hands. This is Hugh Hewitt, and I recommend you give Cordasco Financial Network a call at 215-558-3500 or visit them online at cfnplan.com.
Now, more of Your Life, Your Wealth. Once again, Steve Cordasco.
We're going to get into talking about the markets, volatility taking place in the markets, certain types of investments that are getting hit pretty hard in the current market environment. We're going to talk specifically about some Vanguard funds, the Vanguard Real Estate Index Fund. Maybe you own it, maybe you don't. I know we have had positions in that particular fund, so we need to talk about it. There are a few others that are in the real estate space and the Master Limited Partnership space. Those of you that may not be familiar with Master Limited Partnerships, they tend to be fairly popular amongst baby boomers and those in retirement because they generate cash flow. And they've been volatile, and frankly, they've been getting crushed over the course of this year so far. So I thought we would enter into a conversation about the markets, volatility in the market. I want to talk about bonds as well because we're seeing volatility in the bond space. And we need to shed some light on what this situation is with regards to where we are putting money today that is tied to all the different various markets. And as we finish a quarter, we're looking at, hey, is the rest of the year look like it's going to be this way? Is this a new trend? And many are scared that the market is going to crash. So we'll talk a little bit about whether there's something systemically wrong within the system that would cause a crash, or is this volatility and downdraft part of something that should be viewed as maybe healthy? Joining me is Alton Woolagey, who is with the Mayo Schneider, and they're part of our group that we rely on to help us navigate the space of investments and what's happening within the market. So, Alton, welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth show.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I thought I'd bring you on today to really talk about what the heck's happening in the markets right now with all the volatility and specific types of investments that a lot of people, especially baby boomers and retirees, are holding in their accounts, and they're wondering what the heck's going on here. Seeing a lot of my wealth evaporate here with what's happening currently. So I thought we would begin with sort of the big picture view, this environment that we're in, that the market now is punishing those that have their money invested.
Yeah, no, and to your point, it's an interesting time to be an investor. And certainly, as we have talked about the market so far year to date over the past 3 months, as we round out the first quarter, you know, January was a very strong year. In fact, every day in January, the market simply went up. February, we saw most of those gains pare back, and you've seen a little bit of volatility here over the past week or two. Politically, you have the Trump administration, you know, a couple of weeks ago, put together tariffs, import fees on steel and aluminum here in the U.S., so foreign countries send their steel and aluminum here into the U.S. It gets a little tax here. And then, you know, other things like, you know, Facebook in the headlines, of course, for, you know, being caught up in some sort of a data issue with another company and taking private data from individuals. And, of course, that had ramifications within the tech world. So these sorts of headlines tend to play out within markets. And, of course, our job is to understand the dynamic of what that means for investors and whether or not if it's actionable or simply just noise in the marketplace and it creates some volatility along the way.
So let's take that, okay? So one is the geopolitical environment, right? That's our leaders who are picking their battles, right? So Trump is now picking a battle with the tariffs. You know, since he's taken office, the market has just taken off. And what has shifted now within the geopolitical environment? I know it's tariffs, but really, that's it? We can say that that's the one thing that the market has decided that it was going to punish this way?
What we saw was a bit of an overreaction, right? And nothing new from this administration, and we've seen this in past time where the administration takes a bit more of a negotiating stance and looks to meet in the middle. And, you know, again, a great example of that, of course, is the tariffs. So initially, there were no exemptions to the tariffs. And then, lo and behold, you know, Mexico and Canada were exempt. And, you know, that has implications for upcoming negotiations for the, you know, North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. In that regard, and the most recent spate of policies that the administration has put out there that tend to be a bit more protectionist than prior administrations, is it was directed towards China and the prospects of China potentially retaliating. Admittedly, when you look at their response, it was largely muted. I think every country out there is looking to avoid some sort of trade war in which there's less growth and trade amongst economies, which means less growth out there in the marketplace.
How about the Fed raising rates? Some would argue that here's the Fed trying to take the punch bowl away of lower interest rates, which are going to keep the economy going.
As we've just heard with the most recent Fed meeting, they raised interest rates further and are on track for there are 2 to 3 more rate hikes this year. And in striking a bit more of a hawkish tone, they may have additional increase in the amount of rate hikes heading into next year as well.
This is what we're going to have, continual downspin in equities every time there's noise in these new directions. This is all new direction. The Fed has picked a new direction. Trump is now heading in a new direction or getting to something he hasn't gotten to before. Now it's here. And then you have all of our data and stuff going on within companies themselves that they're shifting in how they do business. So what does it all mean to the average investor? Somebody who might be a retiree, somebody who might be getting close to retirement, an affluent investor that has put some money away for themselves that need to rely on that money to get through their retired years.
For us, it's staying the course, to be candid. And you know, when you look at the underlying fundamentals of the economy, I mean, there's some strong growth out there with respect to not only corporate earnings. In fact, if you look at the most recent data out there with the S&P 500, 485 of those companies exceeded their expectations for earnings from over the prior quarter. So corporate earnings are strong. When you look again at the prospects of tax reform and money coming back into the system here in the U.S., that tends to play out a bit. If you look internationally, again, there are some strong underpinnings of a growing economy. And so there's a lot of good out there in the marketplace.
And so we've been making some changes, some adjustments to portfolios, depending on the individual and how we're navigating for each of those individuals. There are some names that are out there that have been just beat up that are in the REIT, the MLP space. Take the Vanguard Real Estate Index Fund, the Admiral class. I mean, that thing's down almost 8% year to date. The numbers shift day to day. So folks, by the time you're hearing this, it might be a little bit different because some people go back and listen to what we produce at a later date. But I mean, that thing has just taken it on the chin. Let's talk about it.
In a rising rate environment, and particularly at the start of the year where you've started to see bond assets start to pick up on their yields, traditionally, for these areas of the market, so we're talking about real estate and MLPs, which are income-producing asset classes, and when you have these sorts of investors along for the ride, and then you have CDs start to pick up in yield and bonds start to pick up in yield, you have these investors start to rotate out of these what we call yield proxies, meaning they're using these as substitutes for yield and then moving away in bulk or in mass at the earliest sign of volatility. And that's what you've in essence seen over the past 3 months. So if you look at REITs in and of themselves, you know, real estate, people are still paying their rents and their mortgages, and there continues to be expansion when it comes to real estate, both here in the U.S. and globally. Certainly more sellers than buyers at this point, and that's what's truly driving the depreciation of those funds. But it's not necessarily value destruction, right? So these real estate properties aren't now devalued by 10%. And that's an important distinction when we're looking at these assets, because if you look at the valuations and the ability to produce income, we see this as an opportunity not only just here in the short run, but over a full period. So when you look back at all the other rising rate periods, over the first 3 to 6 months of that period, you tend to have these investors move away and go to treasuries and CDs and those sorts of things. But those that stay invested along the way, you actually see over the full period, not only a bounce back, but of course, income along the way.
And systemically, there's nothing wrong here. It's just money is repositioning, meaning the fast money, right? Day to day, people moving in and out are repositioning. But longer term folks who are saying, hey, you know what? I need income in my retired years. I also need something that's going to give me some upside appreciation. What would somebody do in this particular case? I mean, I know what we're doing in the space that those investments are doing what they're doing, but it doesn't make people feel good that we're doing it for, right? So those that are listening right now, and if you're an investor and you have a diversified portfolio, odds are you probably have some stuff in there that's not working out. We tend to buy in when it goes down, But that seems very difficult for people who have faced a 2008 market collapse situation who were buying into the bank stocks as they were imploding. Shed some light on why somebody should stick with something that has been hit so hard within their portfolio.
Yeah, at its simplest, right? It's when you look across investments, it's prudent not to be reactive to quick movements like this. And for those that, in essence, sold out, what they're doing is selling low and then buying high, right? So they look at winners in the rearview mirror as opposed to looking forward. And that type of mentality or strategy can really get investors in trouble. So our approach is to say, okay, if things have moved around a bit, let's approach it in terms of the overall portfolio, and maybe there's an opportunity, a buying opportunity to your point, and leaning into areas where you see opportunities going forward versus looking backwards.
All right, let's talk about MLPs. That's another area that's gotten banged up a little bit.
Yeah, so MLPs, similar story to the real estate market, where, look, MLPs today, and again, for investors that aren't familiar, these are the MLPs is a short term for the pipelines that are connecting the energy infrastructure here in the U.S. So if you have the upstream, which is the production in North Dakota, and then you have the pipelines that connect that energy to the refineries in Houston, these pipelines generate some income or toll as energy moves through these pipelines.
So just like a car moves on a highway or a byway system and they have to go through a toll to continue to use and get to where they need to go, our energy flow is the same way, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Okay. It's primarily driven by volume or energy flow. And so as the U.S. has become even increasingly more energy independent, you've seen the U.S. become an oil exporter or energy exporter here over the past few years. For an investor within MLPs, this is a compelling opportunity. And at this point in time, MLPs are generating about an 8 to 10% yield. And so across the spectrum of investments, that's sort of an income component is just tough to generate. And so to our earlier comment about yield rotation or investors that are addicted to yield and now they can go to their CDs and other things that are a bit that are much more principal protection based. Some of these as MLPs, as we saw along with real estate, you've seen that rotation of those investors that are a bit more finicky than most. And so MLPs, it's not that the MLP pipelines are now devalued by 10% or so. It's just that the investors that have been invested here in the short term have been moving away and again, providing an opportunity for those to either stay the course or even investors to get in at better yield valuations as well.
As we take a break, we'll come back, talk more about investments, the investment environment, the geopolitical environment, and what you can expect from your investments and whether your investments are positioned correctly and strategies you can use to help you in volatile times if you have an investment portfolio.
Steve's back with more of Your Life, Your Wealth in just a moment.
Hi, it's Steve Cordasco. Do you have a question about wealth planning, taxes, or do you just need some thoughtful guidance about managing your money? I'll be answering some of your questions during upcoming Your Life, Your Wealth shows and podcasts. If you have a question that you'd like answered on the show, drop me an email to asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfn, as in Cordasco Financial Network, plan.com. Include a brief overview of your question and a phone number where we can reach you to arrange a call to the show. So get your questions ready. Email me at asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfnplan.com.
Your life, your wealth continues. Here again, Steve Cordasco.
Alton, welcome back to the Your Life, Your Wealth show. We're going to jump back into it. Let's talk about what somebody might need to do that has part of their money in bonds that is nearing retirement or in retirement.
Yeah, and certainly in this environment, we're in a rising rate environment, it's increasingly more important to be selective about the types of bonds that you're investing in. So for the traditional investor, that's just all U.S. corporate or treasury bonds. If you're in that type of a portfolio, you're actually the worst performer when it comes to the bond space year to date, right? And so, you know, when you own the different bonds, it's important to factor in inflation. It's important to own bonds that are maybe outside of the U.S. that are on a different interest rate cycle. It's important to take a look at the credit quality and maybe take a bit more of an opportunistic stance and look at high yield bonds, which tend to actually hold up better in a rising rate environment. And so when you look at it year to date, that thesis has really played out.
So what's to say, based on this new cycle of interest rate volatility, somebody's looking and saying, geez, on a portfolio of bonds today, it's diversified, like you said. What's the yield on that? What would cash flow coming off of that look like? Let's say you got $1 million in bonds, diversified bond portfolio that we just kind of talked about, mapped out. What would that spin off with regards to interest?
Yeah, so if you're looking at municipals, you're probably looking at around 2 to 3%, depending upon how extended they
so
are
municipals,
along the
so municipals are tax-free bonds, right? So they're tax-free. Yeah. Let's say somebody's got an IRA and they're intaxable.
Yeah, so a bit more, maybe 3.5 there.
Really? Okay. So now we're looking at down 1.5. The Vanguard Total Bond Market Index is down almost 2. Somebody's looking at it and saying, geez, I'm generating 3% interest off of this, and the market value is down 2. But yet, if they own funds, the nervousness there is like, geez, if everybody gets out, I'm stuck. How do I get my money back? Are individual bonds better for this type of environment, or are we still in an environment where funds will provide the better place to be?
The story on the individual bond side is you need to be mindful on fees as well as the credit quality and make sure someone's monitoring that. Then, of course, on the mutual fund side, you get that broad diversification, you get that income and economies of scale.
What does a portfolio of individual bonds spit out in income versus going the fund direction?
Similar to in line, actually. The only difference is, of course, is that when you own the underlying bonds, and assuming nothing goes awry, you simply get your money back at the end of the bond, and then you have the opportunity to reinvest. And that's, in essence, what a basket of bonds are doing within a mutual fund as well. And there's a fundamental difference between owning, let's say, 20 or 30 bonds versus Vanguard with billions of assets and going into the marketplace and owning thousands of bonds. So from a diversification standpoint, the mutual fund, there's just no comparison to owning individual bonds in that regard and the economies of scale. So when Vanguard buys a bond lot, they're looking at buying maybe tens of millions of dollars of bonds versus, you know, $10,000 in bonds. It's very important that the investor reinvests that money, whether it's the money manager reinvesting it on the investor's behalf or the actual individual bond manager reinvesting it into bonds at the prevailing rates.
But people need the income. So it's hard to reinvest when you need to buy food. Of course, if somebody is in the accumulation phase and they just want some bonds in there to be a diversifier, but for many of you who are listening right now, you're going to rely on that dividend. Not a lot of reinvestment going on today.
There's always that balance. If you're going to reinvest those bonds, what's generating yield at this point and expect to generate a potentially higher yield there?
Hey, great stuff, Alton. Really appreciate it. That's Alton Willoughby. He is with DeMayo Schneider. They're part of our strategy group that we use with our investment team here at Cardasco Financial Network. And if you want to learn more about investing in today's type of market environment, if you want to maybe stress test your portfolio, it's a lot of what we're doing here. We've been stress testing heavily against a rising interest rate environment, a rising inflation environment. I recommend everybody to stress test your bonds as well as your equities to see how this new cycle that we're in, how your portfolio holds up. Stress testing is important, and also getting an opinion. Just reach out to me, asksteve@cfnplan.com. That's asksteve@cfn, as in Cardasco Financial Network, plan, PLAN.com. Hey, have a great week. Enjoyed spending the day with you. Thanks so much for being part of the program on the Your Life, Your Wealth show with me, Steve Cardasco.
Thanks for joining us on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.